passion and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 3 podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
We are back, second half of the show. We were in Knoxville Friday and Saturday, and we seem to be spending more time talking about Dolly Parton attempting to sing Rocky Top than the Rocky flop on the field. But Pat Forty covered that in his column for SI, and he joins us now. Pat, sorry we missed you up there, but really curious to get your view. We know how good Georgia looked, but what about Tennessee? What did you make out of the Vols a year and a couple weeks after one of the biggest upsets in ball history over Alabama?
Yeah, you know, I think they've come back down to earth a little bit here. You know, it was two pretty humbling performances in a row to just get dominated by Missouri and then certainly dominated by Georgia. And being dominated by Georgia happens, clearly. It's happened to basically everyone in the last three seasons. So, you know, I look at it, and I think this is maybe the market correction that was inevitable. Going from Hendon Hooker to Joe Milton. Joe Milton is who he is. He's, you know, he's a good college quarterback, but he's the same guy he's been for several years. He's occasionally inaccurate, overthrows a lot of people, not a lot of touch on his passes. And you hitch your wagon to that guy, and you're going to get some of these results. And so, you know, I think now we're kind of heading to stage three for Josh Heupel is, can you build this thing for the long haul? He got some good players. He did really well with them, with Hendon Hooker and some of those receivers, but they're gone now. And what's going to be stage three? What's it going to look like?
I believe that Tennessee is still ranked. Are they 25th? Is that right? I think I saw. Yeah. So my question, I'm just openly out loud opining here. Has there ever been a team, Pat, that has lost consecutive weeks by 28 points for the third loss or fourth loss of the year, right? Yeah, fourth loss, and still remained in the top 25. What does the AP top 25 mean these days?
It's a great question. And, you know, yeah, that you look at the resume, and there is not a lot on it that just suggests that they really should be in the top 25. But, you know, golly, there have certainly been years when I've done those polls and you're like getting to 18 or so and you're like, boy, none of these teams are any good. And I just ended at 18. So this might be one of those years. Thankfully, I don't have to vote in the top 25 anymore.
Which brings me to the number two and three teams in the country that will meet Saturday. You may have heard about this game in Ann Arbor. I have a feeling you've covered a few of these. But this one is maybe unlike any other. Let's get your thoughts on where Michigan is right now off the field before we get to on the field.
Yeah, is that game this week? Okay, yeah, I wasn't aware. The off-the-field stuff with Michigan is getting messier, more interesting, and I think I would say that we have heard a little bit less piping up from the university and all of its backers about how grossly unjust all of this has been to Jim Harbaugh and the Wolverines. The level of administrative outrage, the melodrama, the crying, cussing coach after beating Penn State, you know, the tweets from the president, it was so over the top. And now, as more information's come out, and they've fired the linebacker coach, and there's a shadow figure named Uncle T who has materialized as a potential conduit to Connor Stallions. Now everybody's gotten quiet, and maybe they should have stayed quiet all along as this thing played out. There's a lot going on there. We still don't know how much, but if Connor Stallions' work was known to more people on the staff, that's a big problem. And if they were trying to cover up connections to Connor Stallions, that's a big problem. And this goes from being, you know, a pretty wild espionage story to a classic cover-up, and those in college sports tend to be problems, as does the previous scandal with Michigan where Jim Harbaugh allegedly lied about meeting recruits, back during the COVID dead period. So there's a lot that Michigan has swirling around it right now.
Well, it didn't stop Harbaugh from meeting the media day, and he made some reference to season one of Ted Lasso. I'm really thrilled with his expertise on television. It's a very funny show, but it had nothing to do with what happens next for him, which doesn't, again, Pat, you've covered a million NCAA hearings. I don't know what century we'll get to Michigan, but based on your knowledge of this board, do you think any of this stuff is really going to add up and stick to them, at least from an NCAA standpoint?
Well, I think there's reason to believe it can. Whether it will is another matter. But, yeah, if you go by the bylaws and what they could be charged with, I mean, Harbaugh's already facing a level one violation for, you know, misleading investigators. That's the previous scandal. This one, there is not a lot of precedent for how to charge a spying ring. But if there is a clear intent to gain a competitive advantage, if it was not an inadvertent isolated incident, if it was ongoing over a long period of time, which clearly this was, I think you can roll all that together and say, that looks like a level one issue to me. And then you add, you know, Connor Stallions in disguise on the Central Michigan sidelines. And then if you have other staff complicit in it, this gets wider and gets more difficult for them to explain away and argue their way out of. So potentially 2024, depending when they could get this thing done, they could get hammered. But we've said that before about the NCAA, and nobody seems to get hammered, so we'll reserve judgment.
As far as the Big Ten is concerned, and I know they agreed, you know, the case was dismissed with prejudice, which means it's not coming back. But do you think that's it for the Big Ten in the Michigan caper?
Yeah, I do think so. You know, I feel like they, you know, Tony Petitti put his neck out there fairly far on this, and is actually coming out of it looking pretty good, you know, with Michigan backing down away from the legal challenge to the 3-game suspension. So my thought is we're not going to see or hear more about this, but there's also 13 aggrieved member schools in that league that are going to watch what the NCAA does. And if they don't feel like justice is served there, we'll see if they go back to the league office and say, you know, if the NCAA ain't going to do it, can you do something more? I don't think that'll happen, but I would say don't count it out just because Michigan has really made some enemies in the Big Ten at this point. I mean, there are people that are furious with Michigan, and this will linger for quite a while.
Pat, back to college football, and it's not on the field, but it is the CFP. I don't know what we'll hear tomorrow night. Frankly, I'm going to find something else to do. I just can't take this anymore until we get to the last week. But in terms of Florida State and everyone else, just the games, we know what's left, but Florida State has the Jordan Travis issue. How do you think they'll measure that one, or how do you think they should?
Fascinating situation. Feel terrible for Jordan Travis. Great player. He's had a great career. But, you know, in basketball, the issue was always we have to select and seed the teams based on who is going to be available for the tournament. And Jordan Travis isn't going to be available. And so I think that really ups the pressure on Tate Rudemacher and on Florida State to look good without him this week against Florida. Rivalry game, night game, Gainesville, you know, it's not going to be easy, even though Florida's been a big disappointment. But and then obviously the next week is going to be the same, but it's, you know, they've got to win the games, first of all. But the Cardale Jones precedent suggests, you know, when Ohio State in 2014 with their third string quarterback won the Big Ten championship 59-0, that if you keep winning without your star quarterback, you can still get in. Now, we'll see what else happens. We've never had five Power Five unbeatens this late in the season, at least in the playoff era. And so that adds a whole other element to this. You can still be undefeated, but if there's, you know, well, there'll be at least three other unbeatens, and then we'll see who's got one loss. And it's going to be very difficult, I think, for the committee to suss this out in the end.
Here on the SEC Network, Pat, How concerned should the SEC schools be if chaos occurs? And you know where I'm going here.
Oh, yeah. Yes, if Alabama beats Georgia, could the SEC be left out? It's possible. I'd have to see it to believe it. I think I wrote in my 40-yard dash this week that if it comes to that, if we end up with, let's say, you know, Big Ten champion, Pac-12 champion, Florida State's unbeaten, Texas gets in ahead of Alabama, that you're going to have a Greg Sankey marathon, maybe even a telethon and a marathon on the Feinbaum show.
Because, I love that line, by the way.
I mean, he will be, you know, I mean, Greg wants what he wants and likes to make a case when he feels like it needs to be made. And boy, oh boy, you know, he made some strong cases on your show earlier this year. And I would be fascinated to hear how that would all go down. But I just can't believe a league that has won four straight championships with three different schools is going to be left out of this thing.
Yeah, we usually don't talk about scheduling here, but in case that happens, we have allotted 18 hours on the Sunday from starting at 9 o'clock Saturday night until noon on Sunday right here. We're doing a special show
there
from
you
Atlanta,
go.
Co-hosted by Greg Sankey.
I love it. I'll tune in.
Pat, thank you. It's always great to talk to you. Pat Forty, in his column, he did say that, which, of course, intrigues us all. We'll take a short break. We have another hour and 45 minutes remaining.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We are back, and we appreciate all of you making time for us. Let's talk to Ashley in Georgia. Hello, Ashley.
Hello, Paul. My question for you, I hope this doesn't come out as rude, but how do I deal with my dad that watches your show religiously, like, all the time? How do I deal with that?
Okay, Ashley, I'm going to sound like a doctor here, but let me get a little bit of information. You're how old?
17.
And your dad is what? 35?
He's 50. Yeah, he's in his 50s.
He's in his 50s. Okay, well, then he's a mature, well... developed man. Ashley, usually with addiction, you need a proper evaluation and a consultation, but I am going to skip all that for you. Are you still in high school?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And you live in Georgia. Where in Georgia?
Augusta.
Okay. Ashley, I don't think there's a cure for this addiction. I don't think there is any. I don't think there's any medication for it. What I would encourage is does anybody else in the family watch the show?
Not really, but every day I just hear the theme song.
Okay.
Like right at 3 o'clock, he's like, "I gotta go watch the Paul show," and then he'll like rush into the living room, turn on the TV, and put on your show.
Okay, Ashley. Here's my evaluation and conclusion. Your dad is fine. You're the person that needs a little bit of help. So what I would advise is for you to bond with your dad. And I mean, what else would you be doing in the afternoon other than watching the Feinbaum show?
I don't really know. Cause I also can watch your show, Paul.
Well, Ashley, I think to be a more rounded young lady, you should watch the show for 20 or 30 minutes with him. Don't make him feel like he's the only person that likes the show. Believe it or not, there are a handful of people that watch this show every day.
Oh yeah, I could tell.
Yeah, so I would do that. When I was a kid, my parents hated my music and I hated their music. But you know what, now that I'm older, I actually listen to the same music that they used to listen to. So I'm not saying you need, you're 17, you got a lot going on in your life, you got a lot of things to do, but just hang out for a few minutes and make him feel like he's not doing something wrong.
Okay, will do.
Ashley, thank you, and all the good luck to you, okay? You may need it. I don't think there's anything. Is there anything? Is there something wrong with watching the Feinbaum show?
No,
I'm not. I can understand why a 17-year-old girl in Georgia would think this is stupid.
Yeah.
But I mean, I get that all the time. I can't. Somebody, I actually watch your show. I mean, we realize. I mean, I'm not going to sound like those goofy. You know, you put on the local news, which is a struggling business right now, and they say, "We know you have a lot of other choices." I'm not ever going to say that. We know you don't have any other choices. This is it. If you like college football, with a particular tilt toward the southern part of the country. This is your calling right here. Augie is up next in New Orleans.
This is a first. First time I've heard Paul Feinbaum give advice to a 17-year-old teenage girl on viewing habits. So you're expanding, Paul.
Well,
you're expanding.
You know, I was 17 once, Augie. I know you probably weren't, but. I remember how 17-year-olds think, and the problem I have with how 17-year-olds think?
What's that?
I still think that way.
I'm 15, Paul. I haven't matured since 15.
Yeah. No, but I got over 15. I'm still stuck in I'm 17.
When I was a 15-year-old kid, for me, the best birthday present was a gallon of gasoline and a book of matches, and I'd go out in the yard and just light little fires. And like, we're worried about this kid. There's
like
something wrong
with
him.
Sounds like a Tim McGraw song.
I should have joined the Army and become a demolitions expert.
You really should have joined the Army. Augie, you would have made something out of yourself.
Yeah, I know. But, Paul, would you ever have thought that the University of North Alabama might have one of the biggest impacts on this year's college football playoffs?
No. What's interesting about UNA, we flipped the game on when I heard about the injury, and I was telling my wife, I said, oh, this is a great program. They won national championships under Bobby Wallace, Terry Bowden.
Yeah.
And then she said, they're 2-9. I said, oh, I haven't followed them in about 15 years, but.
That was a long time ago. I had a cousin who played football at Nicholls State.
Yeah.
And that was when Jacksonville State, North Alabama, I forgot all the UT Martin. We actually went up to UT Martin to see a game. I thought I was in the middle of nowhere. So
Martin, Tennessee, come on. I've been there. It's a nice place.
I think we had to go through Jackson, Tennessee to get there.
Yeah,
and
Jackson
Jackson
is midpoint between Memphis and Nashville.
Well, that was like watching a high school game. But anyway, that's my experience with UNA. And it's just a tragic occurrence what happened to Travis. But if they go undefeated, Paul, how can you not put them in the CPF?
Very, very easily, because you have to measure them against who else they're being compared to. I don't think the ACC has done enough this year where that's an automatic, you're automatically in.
All right. Sounds like we're now trying to politic for other schools to be unnamed to get in.
We are. We have.
I know we are.
We have an objective here.
I know.
That's to get two SEC teams in, and maybe three.
I think Missouri is
worthy of consideration.
Yeah, right. Okay. And, you know, you could say that Billy Napier blew that game or Travis Etienne blew that game by not staying in bounds. But right. That was a good game. And Mertz, if had he stayed healthy, but then again, the backup did a good job. So kudos to Florida. They could have just tucked it in, but they didn't. But, Paul, got to be the biggest disaster of the week. It's got to be down in Auburn. I mean, New Mexico State, really? The Mountain West?
I'm not just saying this, but Jerry Kill is an excellent coach, and that's a really good team. But, you know, Auburn would not have lost that game if the Auburn players had given maybe 40% effort.
Did you watch any of that game?
Well,
I
didn't really know the game was being played. And finally, somebody hit me up in the third quarter. So I said, I need to watch this game right now. And,
well, did you see how they dominated
Auburn?
Yeah,
no, I watched the fourth quarter. I mean, I got enough of the game to get – I watched the absolute mauling on both sides of the line.
It was horrible. Even Abilene Christian kept it close early with A&M, and then they just got overpowered. But Auburn, that was embarrassing I'm embarrassed for Auburn. But, Paul, LSU's defense, they've not improved at all. I mean, they were having the most impossible time stopping Georgia State.
Well,
I mean, come on.
I talked to Coach Kelly earlier. He seemed very happy, so we're gonna trust him over Augie. We're up against the break. We're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And now it's time for Fansville, brought to you by Dr. Pepper.
Jaden Daniels in some pretty serious company right now. Look at that. Jalen Hurts, Kyler, Lamar, Deshaun, Johnny Football, Vince Young, Dan LeFever, yeah. Kaepernick. Back to the calls, and let's check in with Darren up next in Alabama. Hello, Darren.
Mr. Paul.
Yes, sir.
Do you remember we had a conversation about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I told you Alabama's not going to the playoffs. And you told me if they don't make it as a one-loss Alabama, you would quit the show. Remember that, correctly?
Yeah, I remember
that. Do you remember that?
I feel this having a bad.
I mean, I can play it back for you. I mean, I got it on video, whatnot. Do you want me to play it back for you?
Well, no. Listen, I don't need you. So what you're asking me is this: if Alabama beats Georgia and doesn't make the playoffs, I will quit the show. Is that what you're suggesting?
That's what you told me.
Yeah.
You said that. You said a one-loss Alabama would go to the playoffs.
I would say it would be one of the most outrageous. It would be one of the most outrageous decisions in the history of college football.
But what you said is you would quit the show.
Well, my question to you is, do you want me to quit the show?
Sir, can I speak? Sir, can I speak?
No, you can't. We're talking about my future here.
Well, what you said is you would call Nick Saban. Sir?
You asked to speak. I'm letting you speak.
Okay. So you said you would call Nick Saban and y'all would start your own show together. Is that what you said, right?
Well, I really don't remember that. But
Well, I can play it back for
listen,
you because I got
YouTube need,
TV.
You
I backed
have,
it up.
Do you have, well, why don't you go ahead and play it right now if you have it.
Well, I can't because I'm on my phone and that's where it's at. But
I had a feeling you wouldn't be able to back that one up. Trey is up next in Tuscaloosa. Hello, Trey.
Hey, Paul. After the acoustics and the sound at Neyland Stadium with Dolly, do you think Dolly should enter the transfer portal, Paul?
Dolly, I saw Dolly leaving Neyland about 6:30, wearing a dog jersey. She was wearing a Brock Bowers jersey. She has
well, I don't
converted.
Blame her because I love that kid. I know I'm a Bama fan, but I love Brock Bowers. Paul, I'll talk to you. I'm going to pick your brain a minute about Michigan and Jim Harbaugh, so kind of follow me here if you will, okay? Let's go ahead and give Harbaugh the benefit of the doubt that he knew absolutely nothing, okay, which I don't believe. But let's just give him the benefit of the doubt. And me and you talked last Thursday, and I told you more coaches would be getting fired. Well, we've only had one fired. Well, if he knew absolutely nothing, and with the information that has come out, and now he knows more, and I know that he knows more people that were involved, would you not meet with your whole staff, including the water boy and ball boy, and find out anybody, if you don't know anything, anybody that was involved in this? And would, that's kind of like going behind your back on your show. And would, I mean, that makes you, if that's the case, that makes you one of them.
You see, I've been involved in litigation before, and I'll never forget, I started to say something, and the attorney said, I don't want to know.
Well, but you
that's
know, Paul,
exactly
the
where
thing about,
Jim Harbaugh what, does not want to know, because of course he knows. But the
well, wouldn't
wall
you fire them, though?
Him,
if you don't know, would you not fire them? Would you not come right out and fire them?
I would, yes.
Because,
yes, I would fire
okay,
them.
Okay, so because
I don't
if
want,
you don't,
I don't
come
want
right
a guy
out,
who,
if you don't come.
Who, I don't want, I don't want don't, somebody like that working for me.
Correct. And if you don't come right out and fire them, it's because of one reason. It's because they know that you know what they knew.
Of course.
And they would turn on you if you let them go.
Totally agree.
Okay. Well, thank you, Paul, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. But I want to tell you something. Our man made a comment about a week ago. He said it's just entertainment, and he asked you what would Bugs Bunny and Wile E. Coyote do. Well, I'm going to let you know what Bugs Bunny and Wile E. Coyote did at Auburn Saturday. It was just entertainment. And they went and got
yeah,
them up.
T-shirt. I'm a guy that's been loyal to his team. You know who I'm really interested in, see if he'll call tonight, is the trash-talking AJ. Johnny B.
Oh, me. AJ coming up here, huh? First, I'd like to just say something to Ashley. She's young, and she seemed like a very good daughter, but in your dad's advanced state, you just need to get him some beer, maybe a cooler, put it by his chair, some chips. Don't talk to him. Just let him be. When it's over, you can, you know, resume family life. And then if you don't,
I'll let my dad watch whatever he was watching, Lawrence Welk or I don't know. But I think when you're at the elderly age of 50, you just need to let your dad enjoy his fun with the Feinbaum show, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, if you remember, I made up the syndrome, FDS, and it's Feinbaum deprivation syndrome. And if she takes that show away from him, the side effects are unimaginable.
I mean, I think what we do for mankind here is worthy of a Nobel Prize.
It is. And what I was getting at is I can imagine myself as the young tech that they send in there to rig Dolly up for sound, you know, and he probably doesn't even know who she is or what she looks like.
Yeah, you're right.
And he grabs the little box and the wire and the mic, and, you know, you strap it to the back of their pants and you run it up through the shirt and you strap it on. And he walks in there and he looks and I can just see him nervous as a
you know who I think did the sound
for
Dolly Saturday, Johnny B?
Pardon me?
I just thought of it. I think Daryl was in charge of the sound Saturday.
Yeah, I think he got nervous. You know, that nervous jerk twitching he gets going on. And, you know, it probably took extra cable. And I'm not sure that far away from the mouth one of those mics even picks up. But, you
well,
know, a lot of things.
I have. Thanks for the call. I've heard numerous artists in there. And it's why, you know this because you've been, you're a sound guy and you've been part of bands. It doesn't matter what artist it is, whether it's Dolly Parton, Bruce Springsteen, Taylor Swift, Beyonce, you know what they always do late morning, early afternoon? They go by and do a sound check. I'm not talking about somebody that flies across the country to do a benefit and land, like Paul McCartney a couple years ago, he lands. And they take him right to Shea Stadium with Billy Joel. I'm talking about if you have a planned event, you go yourself, because there's not a major artist in the world who knows that's the most important thing. And I wonder if Dolly did that. She probably said, oh, it's only Rocky Top. Everybody has screwed that song up. But Tennessee needs to apologize to Dolly for that, don't you think? I owe Dolly an apology for comparing her to the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama, I heard, wasn't very happy about that. Yeah. Dolly? Jim is up next in St. Louis.
Hey, Paul, I finally got through. Your screener wanted to know, I told him I wanted to talk about Billy Napier, and he wanted to know if it was a positive or a negative call. I told him it was positive.
We don't want any negativity for Billy Napier here.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you, I'm a Missouri fan. I've been a Missouri fan my whole life. I'm 71 years old. I understand Florida has very lofty goals. They've been national champions and everything. They hired the guy last year, and two or three games in, they wanted to fire him. And now they still want to fire him. I know he's lost a lot of close games, but, he's a young guy. They got to give him time to build a program. And it just seems like they're not even giving him a chance.
Well, he's getting a chance. It would cost $32 million to fire him.
I'm sorry?
I said it would cost $32 million if they fired him. That's not exactly not holding their part of the bargain up. And by the way, suggested he's going to get fired.
Well, I know, but you hear it all the time. Well, you heard it last year.
Jim, you hear a lot of things, but that doesn't make them even remotely accurate.
Well, I understand that, but the fan base seems like they're unhappy with him.
Well, Florida fans are expect excellence.
And Billy Napier
season, and he may have another one.
I'm just a poor old Missouri fan. We're not excellent like they are, but
Jim, there's a big difference between Missouri and Florida, and Florida fans expect national championships. Missouri fans are different, and we will be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Ron is in Virginia Beach. Good afternoon,
Mr. Paul. It's always an honor to be on your great show. It's
Thank
cool
you.
How you talk to young people on your show. I watch your show every day. You have a lot of information to share. I appreciate that. Paul, the thing of it is Auburn and Alabama are going to play this Saturday. I could not believe the score of New Mexico State versus Auburn, 31-10. That doesn't mean anything because this is going to be a game. But I still feel Alabama is going to win this game. And also going off on that, Paul, I don't know if you've seen this. This is kind of off college football. They sold a bottle of McKellen 1926 Scotch whiskey in England Saturday for $2.7 million. Paul, would you pay that for Scotch whiskey?
Yeah, probably. I mean,
I figured that you'd
bother
say
Randy.
That.
Would you pay that kind of money?
Sure, why not?
I mean, that
I'm
would.
Thinking
I mean,
you might buy
yeah, I mean, it's
Paul
like, it's
for
not
Randy
like you walk into
crew.
A hotel bar and they give you cheap whiskey. I mean, if I'm going to drink Scotch whiskey, which I haven't done since high school, I'll probably spend that kind of money for it.
Would you really? I would
sure.
too, Paul. I really would.
Yeah.
If I were a
billionaire, I might say, well, why not?
Buy three bottles?
Yeah, just give it out for Christmas presents. And by the way, this is worth $2 million. Don't drop it.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't know anything about whiskey. I really don't. But I was in Kentucky last week, and everybody was telling me about bourbon and Pappy Van whatever and
Van Winkle.
So there has to be something to it, right?
Well, yeah.
I mean, I have been in museums
it.
and looked at Van Gogh's and Rembrandt's and Picasso's and go, I wouldn't put that in my bathroom. So...
Yes.
And we're talking about, art is, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars of art that doesn't, I don't understand it. I'm stupid.
I am too on that. I just can't believe $2.7 million on a bottle of
Scotch whiskey. I don't like spending $4 for coffee.
Yeah.
I mean,
Yes, exactly, like Starbucks or whatever.
Yeah, I got a friend. Hey, by the way, Ron, I just thought of something. I have a friend who just got fired recently. I wonder if Jimbo Fisher would buy it. That I would drink it if offered. Jimbo could afford it.
Yeah, if could afford it, and that's what I'm thinking too.
How much would you spend?
$2.7 million.
Most amount of money you would spend for something like that? Well, you drink, right?
You would spend
$100 for a bottle of bourbon? Wow.
I would.
I wouldn't.
And I have.
No, I haven't.
I have, but not, Paul, not $2.7 million now. Come on, even if I had it, I wouldn't. Would you?
No, I mean, I once splurged for a gift for my wife. I mean, it was some jewelry. And the guy told me, I'd make you a great deal. I can give it to you for $75. I said, too much.
Yeah.
I can't go that high.
I'm the same way.
I'm not going that high.
You're right.
I'll wait for the day after Christmas when it's half price. That's how I was brought up.
You know, Paul, you mentioned that you went to the dollar store and you took a long time to get in it.
100 miles to save $5.
Mine would too.
Yeah. No, we used to do that. Now, when gas was under a dollar, we would drive for 30 minutes because the gas station, wherever it was cheaper.
My family was the same way, Paul. And
mother,
I feel you on this.
My mother died a multimillionaire. Right. My mother died with the first dollar she ever made. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.